Until last year, we had more than 1,000 restaurants accepting Bitcoin for food and for like pretty much everything what you ordered. You can send $10 million in Bitcoin to the other part of the world just in 10 minutes, and the person on the other side of the planet will receive it. From my point of view, it seems like the petrodollar died, and that just means that US is losing their hegemony. If US is losing their hegemony, that means there is a space for other countries, and that means decentralization. We live in absolutely different world now. You can move freely, you can really choose where you live. Most of us can really work from wherever we are online. With that comes a great option to be free.
Bing bong. I am back with another edition of the State of Bitcoin podcast, where I've got the man, the myth, the legend, Matias of BTC Prague, who's holding one of the biggest and most influential conferences in Europe, all on Bitcoin. It's one of the best places to go, so you should definitely check it out. But I brought him on today because I really wanted to dive into the European policies that I'm seeing over on Bitcoin. Specifically, the MiCA policy. Now, there seems to be, you know, some, feeling over here that there is a lot more, surveillance going on in Europe. So how do you feel that this MiCA policy is affecting the adoption in Europe? And what are some of the things, some of the just high level details that you know of this policy?
Yeah, thank you, Brandon. And hello to all your listeners. You know, good start, good question. I personally, I'm not a big fan of regulations. Of course, there are good regulations, but I feel like Europe is over-regulated. And just to play a double advocate on both sides, of course, the market, unfortunately, is not very sophisticated to regulate itself. So perhaps it's a good thing for some subjects that there is a regulation, so they can defend people against some scams, some real scams. But I don't see that the MiCA is actually helping, especially in Czech Republic. Until last year, we had more than 1,000 restaurants accepting Bitcoin for food and for pretty much everything what you ordered, but it stopped. And it is not a direct implication of the regulation, because the MiCA doesn't really forbid the merchants to accept Bitcoin. But those merchants, they were using a third party provider, a bridge, and those third parties are kind of considered as a financial institutions, and they are falling under this MiCA regulation. So it is kind of a second layer problem. And this, of course, burns my soul, because I was very proud talking to all Bitcoiners around the world, how many of Bitcoin merchants we have in Czech Republic, and that you can easily live on Bitcoin, which was true until recently. So for me personally, most of the things didn't change, because I'm a savvy Bitcoin user. But for everyday Jim and Joe who were not there yet, I think this has an effect, and I would say it's more negative than positive.
Yeah, and it's been interesting the times I've gone to Prague. I mean, it seems like there's a huge, Bitcoin presence. I mean, you've got Brains, you've got, Trezor. Some of the biggest companies in the space are all centered at this hub. So, to that point, why do you think that the adoption was so prevalent in the Czech Republic kind of compared to everywhere else? Because 1,000 merchants, even before this regulation, mm-hmm. accepting Bitcoin is absolutely massive. I don't think we have, maybe now with the Square terminals and everything like that, but 1,000 in the United States, I'd find it hard pressed to think that we have that many. Mm-hmm. So why do you think that is, the case over in the Czech Republic?
Well, I think that as everything else, you need time to master everything, and those things didn't happen overnight. Bitcoin has been rooted in Czech Republic since the very beginning, with first ever mining pool happening from Prague. It was a slush pool in 2009, 10, in a very early days, and few geeks were just meeting in a hackerspace called Bermlab in Prague. Since those early days, they were developing products and services for Bitcoin ecosystem. So the first ever hardware wallet happened in Prague, Trezor. BIP39, the seed phrase, was developed, invented in Prague. Then the brains miners, they took over Slush Pool and developed the first ever open source firmware for mining. And also one of the biggest ATM, Bitcoin ATM manufacturers, General Bytes, are from Prague. So we had really smart people and entrepreneurs since the early days. And I think this had a snowball effect on the whole Bitcoin community, because not only that we had like a fertile soil, so to say, from our past when we were under the communism regime, and this made Czech people kind of like against the system, like not very trusting the authorities, and kind of a craftsman culture that you need to make your own things to be able to have something, because during the communism regime there was not enough goods on the market. So people are really kind of nurtured in themselves, like kind of a thing that they have to be responsible for their own good. So when Bitcoin came, it was not very difficult to explain, and I think this is the case until now. People tend to get Bitcoin quite fast, and because we have so many Bitcoiners, even the merchants, they quickly realize that if they give people the option to pay in Bitcoin, that they will get new customers. Otherwise, the people will go somewhere else to spend their money. So I think there are many factors, and together it makes Czech Republic and Prague especially the Bitcoin capital of Europe.
Now, why do you think that, I guess, to kind of parlay off that and just the broader European spectrum, I mean, we hear things over here in the US about Christine Lagarde being very, anti-Bitcoin. She's even cited the way that the Chinese have rolled out the CBDCs and everything like that. And so, as an American kind of coming over, we go through the airports, there's, a lot more scans and stuff like that in Europe. Why do you think that I guess that is over in the European Union, I guess, like broadly? And, why is, I guess, not more people really following the Czech Republic's lead when it comes to Bitcoin in general? Or do you think that they are, and it's just they're lagging behind a little bit?
Well, it's funny that you are saying that you feel like we have more control on the airports than US. I wouldn't agree with that. I think that like when I'm going across the ocean to USA, I feel like the airports are much worse than those in Europe, so that's an interesting point. And I agree with you that it might seems like the Europe is going Orwellian, but it's not the whole Europe. The Orwellian states are those who were privileged in the past 20, 30 years. So fortunately, not fortunately for my parents, but fortunately for my generation, we are living in a time after the bad times. So it's very good in Czech Republic. So like in the terms of airport controls and kind of this surveillance state, we don't have many surveillance cameras on street. maybe in Prague, yes, but most of the cities are really just like these old days. But if you go to UK or Germany, the situation is perhaps a little bit worse.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting. I mean, I guess, you know, coming in from a foreign perspective, yeah, I mean, the U.S. is pretty strict with visas and everything like that. I've never had to really deal with anything like that. Traveling around, I've kind of, I guess, realized how lucky I am to have the U.S. passport, because nobody really asks too many questions, to be honest. So, yeah, I mean, I definitely can see it from your perspective that it is a little bit harder to get in. It's just... you know, I do see like a lot of the scans, and I do see like a lot of, I guess like Europeans having a strong, let's say like Bitcoin mindset. And it's, I think it's a little different because in the US right now, you know, I mean, obviously we have the dollar, the global reserve currency status. And it seems like the way that the Bitcoin space is over in the US is more of, let's say like, you know, the hard asset, right? Digital gold is kind of how it's being viewed right now. How would you describe people viewing Bitcoin over in, you know, Prague and in greater European area? Because it does seem like, you know, like I said, the merchant adoption has been a lot faster than it has been over here in the US. Of course, we just had Square, you know, kind of help unlock a lot of that. But, you know, it seems like there's kind of two different, I guess, two different industries or two different like Bitcoin movements growing, yeah, kind of in a different direction. So why do you think that is? And how would you describe the European, Bitcoin adoption as a whole?
Good question, Brandon. I think, and for me personally, still the saving vehicle Bitcoin as a store of value is the most important thing. I mean, no one likes inflation, and perhaps this is some similarity between US and Europe. We have inflation, people are struggling, my generation is struggling, and so Bitcoin is still perceived, even in Europe, mostly as a store of value and as a hedge against inflation. But because of, and the Europe is full of, we have many countries, many cultures. So each country is a little bit different, you know. More you go to East, where there was a socialism in last generation, the people really understand that they should be prepared for some other risks, some like hedging against systematic risks and hedging against the government trying to steal our money. So they understand also the freedom part of the movement to be able to not only make an investment, but be able to take your money with you if you are running out from the country. It's very difficult to do it with real estate and bars of gold. But it's super easy with Bitcoin. You just remember 12 words and you can flee the country and recover in some more peaceful place on the earth. So I think this is something what is resonating in Europe, and people are kind of exploring those options. We don't have like many... I wanted to say a different thing, like, and don't take it as an offense, you know, like, but you Americans, like, you have a privileged life, so you don't feel the need for solving certain problems what people, for example, in Europe or in Africa have. And that's why perhaps the medium of exchange is trending a little bit more. If you have a Visa, PayPal, and Venmo, why would you use Bitcoin as a medium exchange, right? It doesn't make sense. And the Gresham law is kind of saying that you should spend the dirty money before the good money. So it makes absolute sense to save in Bitcoin and spend fiat. and mine fiat, like do your fiat job and save in Bitcoin. But if you are in a country where you perhaps have very high taxes, the spending Bitcoin actually gives you a good kind of a option to save a little bit more. Or if you are in Africa, where you don't have bank account because they only accept people above certain amount of money, then Bitcoin is the only solution for you to do international trade. And for me personally, Bitcoin is just the best money in the world. And if you compare it with the alternative, with the bank transfers, the bank transfers and the old financial rates don't stand a chance. Like you can send $10 million in Bitcoin to the other part of the world just in 10 minutes, and the person on the other side of the planet will receive it, and there is no middleman, just a little tiny fee and no way to stop it. Compare it with the other option. I need to wait for approval, and if they allow me to send it to the other side of the planet, they probably use 3 or 4 hops between those banks, and it will take from 3 to 7 days. Come on, like we are living in the 21st century. It's over. So I think it's just a matter of the time and matter of the people, the users. How do you want to use Bitcoin? Is it only a saving technology for you? I think most of the people start with that. But if you spend some time studying Bitcoin and using Bitcoin, you actually figure out that the inflation hedge is just the beginning. And then it's about spending Bitcoin and using the tool as it was intended, as a peer-to-peer electronic cash, and using it for gain more sovereignty, gain more freedom. And then perhaps if you go to conference, you figure out that Bitcoin is not only money, it's a network of people. It's a beautiful community full of like-minded folks who will help you on the way towards a better future. Because at least I have the perception that Bitcoiners tend to be more freedom loving and tend to not threat on each other. So the world is going towards more peaceful place. Like if you compare it in with the past, we are more peaceful every day. I would say every generation is more peaceful than the one before. And I really believe that Bitcoin will play a huge role in this societal evolution.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that it is going to, evolve in that sense. And I mean, I think you're completely right. I mean, you know, the Americans over here, I mean, we do have, all these Visa, MasterCard, Discover, all of these different companies that allow you to transact. And, you know, I mean, it's fairly easy for an American to get a bank account. I think, yeah. I mean, I had my first one maybe when I was in like middle school or something. My mom tried to help me build up my credit and do all that kind of stuff. So it's kind of interesting, obviously, you know, the differences between, you know, how Americans are just looking at the system compared to the Europeans. But, you brought up something about, you know, just the peacefulness. And I want to, I guess, see, like, from your perspective, because obviously, like, the U.S., like, we've had a little bit of turmoil here recently, to say the very least. But I think it's highlighted something very interesting in the use case of Bitcoin. So, you know, the Strait of Hormuz, obviously, with Iran and everything going on there, no matter what side of the aisle you're on, I think it is like an interesting use case that we're hearing that, you know, the Iranians are using Bitcoin as like, you know, essentially like a toll to get through the Strait of Hormuz. Obviously, that means they're collecting a big Bitcoin stockpile. There's been rumors that, you know, countries around the world are mining Bitcoin. And I think that this would kind of make it where, yeah, essentially we couldn't have a country like the United States in the future, essentially be able to, I guess, put on sanctions and really enforce them, which would make everything, I guess, like more peaceful because nobody would have that control over every other country. So I guess, what are your thoughts on, I guess, hearing kind of some of the, we'll call it like shadow industries of Bitcoin being used and the use cases that we're seeing play out maybe over in the Strait of Hormuz and what we've heard in Venezuela and other places.
What if I told you never had to sell your Bitcoin? Instead, you can borrow against it with Salt Lending. Why give up your hard-earned Bitcoin when you can unlock its value without letting it go? With Salt, you get secure Bitcoin collateralized loans with no credit checks, no prepayment fees, and best of all, no rehypothecation. Salt has had zero customer collateral losses since it launched. Salt was the first platform to offer Bitcoin collateralized loans starting way back in 2016. Today, they offer tailored options for both individuals and businesses. And now introducing Salt Shield, the no liquidation solution. No forced liquidations during the lifetime of your loan when you're enrolled with Salt Shield. This just launched at the Bitcoin conference in Las Vegas, and it is next level peace of mind. For Green Candle listeners only, head to saltlending.com/green-candle for this exclusive offer for your Bitcoin collateralized loan. You can get cash for your Bitcoin today. Salt Lending, secure, trusted, proven.
The perspective is, at least that's my opinion, that everything is kind of decentralizing. There is a paradigm shift happening now, and I think everything seems like, I'm not the geopolitical expert, you know. Most of the time I just listen to podcasts and I kind of accept the opinions of others. But from my point of view, it seems like the petrodollar died or is dying. And that just means that US is losing their hegemony. If US is losing their hegemony, that means there is a space for other countries, and that means decentralization. So I really believe that this is that wouldn't be possible without Bitcoin, or Bitcoin plays a huge role in this because it's neutral money. No one can control it. So it kind of gives the countries very fair way how to opt out of the system. They didn't have the option before. You know, there were no neutral money. You know, they had to join the strong players. So the thing what happened with Strait of Hormuz is just showing us that, and it's like the third example of country which is somehow exploring the options to either go around the sanctions or to just stay more competitive on the global market. So I kind of like it, you know, just the things around are not very pretty.
Yeah, of course, right? I mean, nobody likes war at the end of the day, but I mean, I think it is like an interesting use case of what is going on with Bitcoin here, right? Because I mean, like you said, I think it's a going to encourage a lot of the decentralization in this just globally, which I think is going to be very unique, especially when it comes to global trade and everything else there, right? But we don't have to dive too deep into the geopolitical lens of that. I just think it is kind of showing a lot of the use case. But let's get back to, I guess, like the broader European, I guess, view of Bitcoin, because you know, in America, obviously, we've had, you know, the Genius Act passed and, you know, a big push for stable coins. And I think a big part of that is just because of the potential of the surveillance. You know, obviously, you know, Tether and Circle have worked with authorities in the U.S. previously and have frozen accounts and even frozen Venezuelan accounts just because of the rumor that they were, you know, doing this kind of shadow Bitcoin type of industry. So it doesn't seem like there's as big of a maybe stablecoin push in Europe, at least maybe I might be missing something, but why do you think that is, where there's a lot of stable coins being pushed in the US, and it doesn't seem to be as heavy in the European nation.
Yeah, I wish I have a good answer for you, Brandon, but I don't. Like, really, I'm so deep in Bitcoin and in my business that I'm missing most of the news and informations. I wish I had an answer for you. And if you think it is like this, I believe it's good to don't have like too much of stable coins. Like, what the stable coins really are, they are just more faster fiat, right? They are not stable. Like, why do you call them stable? They are still very unstable and controlled. And from my perspective, again, if I thinking about it even more, like, it's just the way how to export the inflation and the Cantillon effect even more further. So I don't like it, you know. Unfortunately, we perhaps need some kind of a money before the Bitcoin will get to every part of the world. So if I'm thinking about stable coins, I feel this is kind of a transition phase technology, which is necessary for the world to function, because the old financial rails, the traditional financial rails, are really not ready for the technological shift we are now in with AI. Yeah, like, I mean, what kind of money will the AI use? Definitely not bank accounts, right? So we already see that AI, if we give a chance AI to pick some currency, it will pick Bitcoin. But perhaps the other crypto and stable coins will be also on the plate for some kind of finance on the digital layer. So I don't know if I answer your question at least somehow.
No, you got it. Great answer. I think, yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it is, a different, and maybe it's like a speed bump, or, we have to essentially, adopt stable coins just to get people more familiar with utilizing, I guess, like digital types of currencies, scanning the QR, doing all that kind of stuff before, we get to a hyper Bitcoinized world. But, it definitely seems like there is, like I said, that the adoption over in Europe is, significant.
If I can jump into it, I think it is a there is a threat in Europe with CBDCs coming online this year. It's been approved, and there will be pilots happening. And again, don't take my word for granted, because really I'm not an expert. I read, I just listen, but it seems like to me that it's coming. And it wasn't like this. Like if you ask me 4 years ago when we started Organized BTC Prague, it was kind of the thing that we were informing people that something is being prepared, but it was more like, okay, this is happening in China, like no one really paid attention to it. But now it seems like it's a real threat which is coming to Europe. And perhaps the stable coins might be a vehicle for this, because for CBDC to function well, you need kind of a programmable money you can analyze, you can control, you can surveil, you can you can send from a helicopter, or you can somehow set expiracy. You can do all those things with stable coins and other crypto, but you cannot do it with Bitcoin, So this is very, very doomy. This is Orwellian, but it also plays for Bitcoin, because people will go towards the better option. So that's why kind of I feel like Bitcoin must win and will win, because the other option is just so, so bad, and it's already doomed because we have Bitcoin.
Imagine heading into retirement and knowing that no matter what Bitcoin does, whether it drops 60%, runs to new highs, or chops sideways for years, you're good. Your stack is intact. Your income is secure and you're not losing sleep over it. Strongwealth was built for retiring Bitcoiners like you. Book a free discovery call at strongwealth.net and find out what retirement can look like with the right plan supporting it. Head on over to strongwealth.net and tell them that Green Candle sent you. All right, enough for me. Let's get back to the show. Yeah, and it's interesting because, you know, at the World Economic Forum, you know, Larry Fink came out and said that the elites at Davos have essentially lost a lot of trust from the greater public. And so I think it's not just Bitcoiners. I think a lot of people are starting to feel it, especially with inflation globally and just kind of like the difficult times. So I would say, like, if they're developing these kind of things, I think there's a lot more distrust when it comes to, you know, government, we'll call them experiments, or government like rolling out things like this, like CBDC. So I think, you know, you're nailing it on the head. Eventually Bitcoin will win. They'll try to incentivize us somehow to, you know, adopt the CBDCs. But I think, you know, that's a long ways away. And I don't think that they're going to, you know, be successful in that endeavor, to say the very least. But we'll get back to the positives and the developments of Bitcoin, because, you know, obviously you're at the forefront of, you know, the European, I guess I'll say the greater European area or nations adoption in Bitcoin, just because of, you know, the giant and great conference you put on. But from your conversations, how are, you know, central banks and maybe some like policy leaders, are they, you know, maybe tapping you on the shoulder and asking you about any advice on Bitcoin, or, you know, helping you explain, like, how are those kind of conversations going with government officials and people up in high places, I guess is how I'll put it.
Yeah. They're definitely not tapping on my shoulder, because as you can see, I'm not very pro politics. You know, I'm more libertarian. You could almost say anarcho-capitalist. So there are other people who are advising suit coiners and government officials. It is happening. The institutionalization of Bitcoin is happening. We've been waiting for it. It's a necessary part of the Bitcoin evolution. The normies will not jump in if they don't get Bitcoin from their favorite bank and favorite financial institution, you know? It's a sad reality. So at BTC Prague, we have a rule that we never invite politicians on the stage. It's kind of a rule we set with my brother when we started in 2020. And it was a great decision, because there are not so many well-spoken and well-educated politicians who can deliver their promises. But I must say that I was very nicely surprised about the changes what happened in Czech Republic only in last 3 years, when we get our Czech parliament unitarily vote for no capital gains taxes after holding Bitcoin for 3 years. It happened after the Czech Cryptocurrency Association advocate for Bitcoin and organized a small conference inside the parliament where the leaders of Czech companies kind of explained how Czech Republic is strong, and that if the laws won't change, it might have the effect that the companies will flee the country and will establish their headquarters in different jurisdictions. And it's not just about the companies. It was also about individuals who somehow accumulated quite a fortune, and they were really figuring out to moving to different countries. So when the politicians heard this story and they heard the feedback from normal people on social media, they really changed their mind and decided to create a friendly environment. And that kind of changed my mind. So from absolute anarcho-capitalist, I kind of changed to person who is open to dialogue, and not that I would lead the dialogue, but I'm happy to make BTC Prague as a synchronization point for a lobby, but for the resistance pretty much, because really I believe that the time is now to act like we are already there. Imagine where Bitcoin will be in 10 years. But why we shouldn't act like we are already there, you know, like with the power Bitcoin will have in 10 years. Bitcoin for me is a teenager now, but as a teenager, you can already act like adult, or you can still act like a kid. The choice is really on us now. So I would rather choose to act like an adult and prepare the ground for future. And that's what we are doing at BTC Prague. We are trying to put the smart people together with politicians, with advocates, so they can learn from each other. Because if you make a decision without the base, without the education, it's usually not the right decision.
Yeah, I think that's a 100% a great way to look at it. Now, I guess on that note, have you had any like politicians? Are there any, I guess, like scheduled coming in this time, or are you, I guess, more welcoming them in to ask questions and, you know, kind of get in the rooms with and maybe help facilitating those with like meetings with, you know, people like Michael Saylor or something like that, so they can get some education first before going on a stage?
Yeah, no, we don't allow politicians on the stage. That didn't change. So no politicians on the stage. There is a news, you know, I think you've heard about it, like Czech National Bank playing with Bitcoin. So this is kind of interesting because, like, we wouldn't be here without national banks, right? Like, who is the big boss here? So this is a funny thing. Like, Aleš Michal, the Czech national governor, being a speaker on the biggest Bitcoin conference on the earth in Las Vegas. And stay tuned. Maybe he will be on the stage at BTC Prague, but I can't tell you more now.
This bull run, I'm looking for ways to stack Bitcoin in my sleep, and mining has always caught my eye. I've partnered with the guys over at Simple Mining to help you do just that. I don't recommend anything that I don't use personally, so I've got a machine up and running with them right this second. And they've even opened the facility up so anyone can go and visit. They manage over 15,000 machines for 500 clients, handling all of the maintenance and repairs so you don't have to. And for the Green Candle listeners, they're giving an exclusive offer, all the repairs for the first year for free. So if you've been thinking about mining, head on over to simplemining.io/greencandle to get this exclusive offer and learn about the potential tax benefits that you can get from mining with Simple Mining. All right, enough from me. Let's get back to the show.
All right, there we go. Stay tuned. I love it. But yeah, I mean, it is kind of like, I guess, interesting. We've seen this shift because I mean, I've definitely noticed it, as I'm sure you have too, because there is a lot more of the suit coiners, the treasury movements. There's just a lot of politicians coming in. And I think, you know, from just a greater Bitcoin lens, if Bitcoin wasn't able to survive, you know, all of these people coming in, you know, it wasn't destined to win anyway, right? Because I think at the end of the day, Bitcoin is for everybody. It's for our enemies. It's for our friends. It's for everybody. So I think it'll kind of, like you said, like align more incentives because people will realize, okay, you know, this country over here is being way more friendly to Bitcoin than this country over here. So the wealthy Bitcoiners are going to move to the one where it's more friendly. And then, you know, you're going to see kind of that mass exodus. And we're seeing that, I think, in a few areas already in Europe. Like the UK specifically is seeing, I think, the biggest loss of millionaires and, like, quote unquote, wealthy individuals leaving their country. So I think over time, you know, a lot of people are just starting to vote with their feet. And it's just going to get easier because of the digital world and digital money that we're making. So, you know, how do you see Bitcoin, I guess, kind of, I mean, playing a role in all of this? Is this just kind of, I guess, the new wave, I guess, because everything is decentralized. You can make money anywhere, essentially.
You know, it wasn't easy to travel and change the way how you live in past, like 100 years ago. It was very, very difficult. Just, you know, like if you got the heritage from your parents, it was most of the time it was a house, and you lived in the house for the next generation, then you gave it to your kids. We live in absolutely different world now. Like you can move freely, you can really choose where you live. Most of us can really work from wherever we are. We are online, and with that comes a great option to be free. You know, like, I mean, this is too philosophical, I guess, because I mean, it used to be that the state had really power over you, you know, because you had no other choices. It was very difficult to move. But now we live in a time when it's super easy to move. You are with your laptop and with your phone, and you are a very powerful individual. You can be a powerful individual. And the state is still acting like it has a power over you, but it doesn't, you know? So, I mean, it's just the realization that you can live however you want and take your future into your own hands. Just this realization, this shift is happening now with my generation, and who knows how the world will look like in only 30 years with all these other technologies like robotics and bionics, genomics, sorry, and different like biohacking techniques, how long we will live. I think that the future is super exciting, and we just need to figure out the new way of living and social interaction. And Bitcoin is just one tool. For me personally, it's just the best money we have. Of course, the amplifying effect is huge, but I think it's good to start thinking in a bigger picture, because like really Bitcoin is just a part of the paradigm shift.
Yeah, definitely. And I think you know, that kind of, I guess, parlays pretty well into what's going on over at BTC Prague, because I mean, you guys have seen probably like a big paradigm shift, and you've been putting on this conference now for, like, this is going to be the sixth one, right? Because you started in 2020. Is that correct?
Yeah, we started in 2020 with our Czech conference, and BTC Prague is the first one was in 2023. So okay, this year will be fourth.
Okay. Yeah. So this will be the fourth, just, I guess, like big giant European conference, opposed to just the Czech one. So what are some of the developments that you've seen just from bringing in this conference, outside from, you know, obviously the suit corners coming in? What are some of the bigger things that you're noticing as a shift of putting this together?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we, the BTC Prague, for those who don't know, is the biggest in Europe. Every year we'll welcome something between 7 and 9,000 people, 250 speakers. It's 3 days long, 4 stages, a huge expo with 80 plus Bitcoin only booths We don't work with exchanges who does have their own token. We really care about the ethos. And every year we change a little bit just to answer the market, you know? So in the beginning in 2023, the conference was different because the sentiment was really, really different. If we are doing it during the bear market, we focus more on the hardcore users and we tend to encourage them to level up because you should never stop learning with Bitcoin. It's an unlimited supply of knowledge. And regarding this year, what is new, we have actually figured out, and maybe before I said that, it's, you know, we, and by we, I mean me and my brother, mostly as a co-founders, it's a family business. We like to organize the event as it is for us. You know, we are hardcore Bitcoiners. So we like to do the things that we would actually enjoy. So how we are changing over time, we figured out that we actually know quite a lot about Bitcoin. We know all the basics. And the community is growing with us. And we kind of figure that we have different passions. It's not just about Bitcoin anymore. It's about AI. It's about biohacking. It's about how to be a good parent and how to be a good neighbor, how to create local communities.
One of my favorite things about Bitcoin is hanging out with all of you. And one of my favorite places to do that is at BTC Prague. It's from June 11th to 13th in the Mecca of Bitcoin over in Europe. It's the largest conference in Europe, and it's by far my favorite. So go on over to BTC Prague, book yourself a ticket using promo code GreenCandle. We've got excellent guests, excellent people speaking. You're going to hear cold, hard truth from great maxis in the space. So no fluff and all real stuff about Bitcoin and building in the bear market. So go on over and join me in BTC Prague. Use promo code GreenCandle and we'll share a beer together. All right, enough from me. Let's get back to the show.
How to make sure that we keep the right culture, that we don't lose the culture we already have. So those are things what Bitcoiners love to talk about, except Bitcoin. And this year, we are actually introducing a new track. It's a one-day track on the outside stage. So it's a sunny weather, imagine Prague, nice weather, cold beer, and the track full of those other topics where we mix the headliners with people and the option to ask questions. So you are really getting the answers on those topics from experts, and really I think this have a great implication on your life. We start with savings, but you don't stop with just the best money. You need to fix your, not just fix the money, fix the world. You need to fix your life as well, you know? And for that, you don't need to develop a wheel. It's already being developed and it's being talked about inside the Bitcoin community. So we are gathering those people who moved on, so to say, moved to other things like Satoshi, and they are sharing this knowledge with others. So I'm very excited about this because this is where my personal passion last year is. If I have a free time, I don't read Bitcoin books anymore. I've read like 30 of them. So I read about biohacking, about parenting, and I play with AI a lot because I feel that's where the edge is, where I can get, when I can get better and what is needed for the future.
Yeah, I definitely think all of those things are really going to be at the forefront here, especially that, you know, what I'm seeing and a lot of the Bitcoiners, the OGs that I'm seeing are like kind of going head first into a lot of AI and stuff, but a lot of them as well have been going into the biohacking. And I'm kind of curious your opinion. Do you think that that is because, you know, essentially we've had it where, you know, the fiat system, we've had to, let's say like hustle and bustle is kind of a phrase here, but essentially just work really hard, you know, to try to make it. And so all you can really focus on is just making that next, you know, dollar or euro or whatever it is. But once you have Bitcoin and you're able to save after a few years, you're able to focus on some things that matter in life. Mm-hmm. That, you know, yeah, a lot of older people have said, oh, I wish I didn't work as hard. I wish I spent more time with family, all these kind of things. Is that what you think, I guess, Bitcoin is going to allow us to, I guess, accelerate that? And instead of, you know, wishing that when we're older and maybe on our deathbed, we're able to say, hey, you know, I did everything I kind of wanted in life. And, you know, a big reason of that was Bitcoin and the ability to save.
Yeah, yeah, that's a great observation. I 100% agree with you. Most of the people live rat race. It's very difficult to escape the fiat rat race because the inflation is making your money less valuable every year. So you are just working. And if you know Maslow hierarchy of needs, the first two levels are kind of a basic needs, right? And the self-fulfillment, I think, is the third level. And that's where the magic really happens. And I believe that Bitcoin helps you to go. Bitcoin actually answers all the levels of Maslow hierarchy of needs, you know, because it really gets you on the top of the pyramid where it's enlightenment. but I believe that if you start saving in Bitcoin after 4 years, after one cycle, you actually have some savings, and it gives you the option to think about different stuff because your mind is more calm. Like you feel like, okay, I'm safe, you know? The feeling of safety unlocks the brain power potential. And that's why I believe Bitcoiners love to talk about those other things, because they don't think about those two first layers of the Maslow hierarchy of needs. They are in the third layer, in the self-fulfillment, and they are looking for ways how to make their life even better and how to help others. So yes, absolutely, I agree with you. And I would say that Bitcoin is a level up technology. It really gets you to places where you wouldn't be otherwise, or it would be extremely difficult to get there.
Yeah, 100%. I agree with that. Well, on that note, outside of that, is there anything else that the listeners here should know about Prague? Because I know everybody here is going to be planning their trips over across the pond, at least for the American listeners here, to come to this great conference. So is there anything else you want to tell them before we wrap things up here?
Well, you know, I think that's like a necessary stop, you know, like BTC Prague is really a great place. It's a massive conference, but it's not that big. It's kind of homey, like you meet people outside and just chat, you know. It's a very, very friendly place. And the city is beautiful. I mean, Prague is one of the oldest city in Europe. It has a medieval city center with very small, narrow streets, a huge castle. So definitely spend a few more days just to do some tours. And the food is great. The beer is really great. Pilsner Urquell is the best beer in the world. And it's very cost effective. So just check out our webpage. We have many speakers. We have the very obvious headliners like Michael Saylor, Jack Mallers, Adam Back, Jeff Booth, Natalie Brunel. But we have so many other speakers who talk about those other topics, like Bitcoin as a medium of exchange, Bitcoin as a tool for freedom and liberation, Bitcoin as an open source technology. We dig into those other aspects. And one of our mottos at BTC Prague is actionability. I'm a program director, and when I speak to speakers and when we discuss the topics, I never give a words in their mouth, but I ask them to find the edge and make it or convey it in the way that it is actionable. Because if it's only interesting, it's great, but I want our attendees to really level up, to get better, to start using the tools. And that's something what we preach from the day one. And we have a great feedback from people who are coming every year and they are growing with us. I have so many great examples of people who found their friends, their business partners, or they kind of get the right idea at BTC Prague to start their own business or a little project just to join the ecosystem. Because it is really a very exciting time. We are in the year 93, if you compare it with internet. So it's good to invest a little bit of your time and money to meet the luck halfway.
Exactly. And I think, BTC Prague is my favorite conference. And I think this will be either my second or third year now. I think second year. Yeah. Going all over there. But yeah, I mean, I can't say enough great things about the city of Prague. And I think everybody should go and come to the conference because it's incredible. I've been to plenty of them around the world, but BTC Prague is definitely my favorite. So I'll put everything in the show notes. We got a promo code as well. If you guys want to buy the tickets there with a promo code Green Candle. And Matthias, thanks so much, man, for coming on and sharing your wisdom and everything that's going on over in Europe and BTC Prague.
Yeah, I don't know about wisdom. It's just my two stats for those who are interested. But thank you, Brandon, for inviting me and looking forward to meet you in Prague.
Thank you guys all for tuning in to another great episode of the State of Bitcoin podcast. If you found some value in this one, please hit that subscribe button and that like button to help send this one to the masses. And I've got a surprise for you guys. I've got two more episodes that you have the chance to watch here. So go ahead and click one of them, and I'll see you guys all at the next one.